This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission recently approved the applications of 3 subscription radio providers. Subscription radio is also known as satellite or pay radio. The stations receive revenue from listener subscriptions as well as from advertisements. Although the CRTC has said that Canadian licensees are needed to prevent increased subscriptions to U.S. stations, 2 of the 3 approved applications are partnerships with existing American satellite providers. The National Campus and Community Radio Association has joined a coalition of organizations that is currently launching an informal appeal into the CRTC's licensing decisions. Freya Zaltz is on the board of the NCRA. She's also the programming coordinator of CJSF in Burnaby. She joins me by phone this morning. Good morning, Freya.
Good morning.
So what type of programming are we likely to hear on satellite stations?
Well, there's a wide variety that they would propose, and it's, I think, the same variety that they're currently providing in the U.S. with just a few additional channels that the Canadian government is requiring them to provide with Canadian content. So one of them, for example, would deliver 72 subscription radio channels, and 8 of those 72 would be required to be produced in Canada, and the others can all be American-based. And each channel generally offers something different. So there would be a certain number that would be talk radio. Some might be all news. There might be one that's all sports or several with different perspectives. I know that they have at least one channel that's kind of Howard Stern all day, all the time. And then they have various different kinds of music channels. So if you're someone who really likes a particular kind of jazz, you know, there won't just be one jazz channel. There might be 6 or 8 of them, all different kinds of jazz. And you could tune into that station and hear very little talk and only the kind of music that you've chosen to listen to.
Would some of this be repeated programming that on a cycle that comes back around, or would it vary?
I don't exactly know how they produce it. I think with the talk segments, I've heard that they have something like 4-hour blocks. So if you tune in 4 hours later, you might hear some of the same thing again, particularly with the news and the sports. But I don't know how the music works. I imagine they have quite a large array of tracks to choose from. So eventually you'd hear something the same. But I think because it's digital, they and presumably they're using some kind of computer database to generate the playlist, they could probably go on for quite a long time without repeating.
So can you tell us a bit more about the Canadian content requirements that the satellite providers have?
Well, there actually were 3 applicants for these licenses, and 2 of them were American satellite-based applicants, and 1 of them is a Canadian terrestrial applicant. So I can explain that in a moment, but the Canadian requirements of the 2 satellite-based applicants are that they have to provide 8 out of 72 channels which are produced in Canada, and then on those channels, 85% of the musical selections and spoken word programming must be Canadian. So 15% doesn't have to be. And then 25%, so 2 out of 8 of those Canadian channels must be in French, and 25% of the selections played on those 8 channels must be by emerging Canadian artists. So that's pretty low when you consider that they have 72 channels in total and that the others would have no Canadian content at all. People would actually then have to choose to listen to one of these 8 channels in order to hear anything Canadian.
And as you mentioned, that one of the proposals that was approved was from a Canadian-owned company. How is that all-Canadian proposal different than the other 2?
Well, they've proposed to provide, it's still subscription service, but it differs in 2 ways. One is that they've proposed to use a terrestrial distribution service, so they would have towers in various locations, the same way that radio is broadcast now, or similar, except that it would be digital. So it wouldn't necessarily reach everyone in the whole country because, you know, they're limited to how far the signal can reach from any given tower. I imagine it would mainly service the people people who live in urban centers. And then there are implications of that. One of them is that they propose to make their digital frequencies available to other broadcasters to use as well, which is a very positive thing because the FM band, particularly in urban centers, is just about full. So new radio stations are finding it very difficult to obtain frequencies and broadcasting licenses if there's no space left, and this would allow for some extra room for growth in the radio sector that wouldn't necessarily be accessible to us if we wanted to try to get on somebody's satellite, which would be far more prohibitive in terms of cost and technology. The other way that it differs is that they propose to provide 50 channels, all of which would be produced in Canada, and all of which would adhere to the current Canadian content rules, which require 35% Canadian content for popular music programming anyway, and 65% of selections would be in French on the stations that they consider to be French channels.
Will satellite technology cause listeners to move away from AM and FM radio?
Well, it certainly could. One of the ways that that can happen is that the big American car companies are proposing to install satellite receivers in all the cars that they build. And I assume that they might do that anyway, because satellite radio seems to be gaining a lot of popularity in the U.S. But if they make those receivers available in cars in Canada, then people will be able to choose. In the same way they can choose right now to have manual or power windows, they can choose to have an AM/FM receiver or a satellite receiver in their car. And so I think then people might actually have to go out of their way to own a radio. And I'm even seeing that now. There are people who tell me that they've never listened to the station I work for because they don't have a radio. Like, you can buy a stereo system that doesn't contain a receiver now, and it used to be kind of standard that would be included if you were to buy any kind of home entertainment system. And people often don't even have radios in their cars because they'll install a CD player instead. So this just gives people another option, and I think many people prefer it to commercial or campus radio because they don't have to tune in at any specific time in order to hear the music that they like, and there will be less advertising, I believe, than there is, and less talk than there is on current commercial radio stations.
The NCRA is requesting an appeal of the decision as part of a coalition that includes associations representing Canadian independent music producers, songwriters, and radio artists. What are the impacts in the long run that you think satellite radio will have on local campus and community stations beyond, in addition to what you've already mentioned?
Well, I think that particularly for stations that raise money through listener support, I think that they stand to lose some of their revenue because people can now choose. They can say, well, I'm going to spend $10 a month subscribing to satellite radio, and I don't need to give Co-op Radio my membership fee because I'm already hearing what I like on satellite radio. And I mean, that's obviously not everybody. There are people who are interested in campus and community radio for other reasons, partly because we do produce our programming locally and because there's an educational component and there's a lot of spoken word programming and a voice for opinions and voices that would not otherwise be heard in mainstream media. But for people who tune in for reasons of specialty music, those people might say, well, I don't need to spend $40 or whatever the fee is for a membership if I can pay $10 a month and hear the jazz that I would have tuned into for an hour a week on co-op. I can hear that all day, every day now. So I think that's one of the ways that will be impacted. And as well, I think as a medium like digital satellite radio grows and becomes more popular, I think there's a chance that we may begin to seem even more insignificant in terms of what we do. And as it is, we have to struggle for recognition like we're quite often forgotten about. The government recognizes three sectors of radio. There's public, private, and community. And we're kind of relegated to last place. So that impacts us when it comes to government support in terms of legislation and what kinds of processes they put in place for us to obtain licenses and how difficult that is for us. And then also their willingness to give us financial support to continue to do what we do. And apparently they do recognize it as an important service that we provide that no one else is providing to the Canadian public. But they may come to see that as less important as the commercial success of satellite radio grows. I think people can quite easily be blinded by something that's commercially successful and forget about the importance of the things that are less commercially successful or not at all commercially successful as we are.
And why are Canadian independent artists and producers opposed to these satellite stations?
Well, I think as far as Canadian content goes, I think that depending on how you view commercial success for artists, I think it can be argued that the current Canadian content rules have been they've been successful in terms of providing additional support to Canadian artists and providing them with additional opportunities for airplay and opportunities for exposure in the commercial radio and commercial music realm that they wouldn't have had before we were required to play this music. And it's not only campus and community radio, it's commercial radio as well that provides those opportunities. And there have been arguments about the fact that commercial radio tends to focus on those artists that are already well established, and so it's still very difficult for new artists to gain exposure. But the fact that we have to play this music, I think, goes a long way in terms of giving these opportunities to artists in the first place. And, you know, providing only 8 channels out of 72 that would have any kind of Canadian content and then making those optional for people to listen to, I think you'd find that not very many people would listen to them at all. And then the likelihood of commercial success for any of those artists would be a lot lower. And then it makes it difficult to argue that commercial radio and campus and community radio must continue to meet these Canadian content standards that currently exist if the American providers don't have to do it.
And what do you hope that the government will do?
Well, I think we hope that the government will reconsider the decision. I mean, I think that all of the groups that are involved in this informal appeal are in favor of the CHUM application, which was the terrestrial application. We felt that was something that we could work with, and that it wouldn't necessarily significantly impact our stations in the same way as the satellite applicants would. And CHUM has said that it's not economically viable for them to go ahead with providing their service at all if the two satellite providers were also approved. And the CRTC has gone ahead and approved all three, which basically means that that the CHUM service probably will not be launched. I mean, the American providers are going to be using satellites that already exist, and the amount of new investment that they have to put in to make this service available to Canadians is minimal, whereas CHUM would have to set up the entire infrastructure and produce all 50 channels in Canada before they can get anything on the air. So I think what we were hoping is that the government would reconsider all of the applications and the decision that they made and maybe create some kind of additional restrictions or some kind of process where they would maybe approve CHUM provisionally, and then the others would have to wait before they can get involved, something like that. But it just seems like they haven't really considered the full range of options that exist, and that they haven't considered as carefully as we'd like them to. They haven't considered the ramifications.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Freya.
No problem.
I've been talking with Freya Zaltz, Programming Coordinator at CJSF in Burnaby.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.